Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Reservations, and I'm Rain Whalen.
And I'm Barnaby Jones.
It sounds like you should be like a like an entertainer of some sorts.
So the where that name comes from is from a movie. It's, I don't know, like probably the best Christmas movie of all time. It's Jingle All the Way. Sinbad has, you know, the package that he's saying is a bomb, right? And he's threatening the cops with it. And he's like, get on the ground, you know, whatever. Put your guns on the ground, get on the ground. And then the police chief is still standing. And he goes, you too, Barnaby Jones. And so that's, you know, for, you know, 25 years has been stuck in my brain as...
That's such a deep cut, and that's you're not talking about Sinbad in the movie called Shazam, because that movie doesn't exist,
right?
Can I be honest? I haven't seen that movie, Jingle All the Way. I haven't seen that movie in like 20 years.
Wow, I watched it this year during Christmas time. So,
well, and see, like at the store during Christmas. Like at the store during Christmas, like we'll put on Freeform on the TV.
Yeah.
Because they do their 25 days of Christmas movies. Mm-hmm. So they just cycle through fucking movies. And I'm like 90% certain Jingle All the Way played at one point, but I wasn't paying attention.
Of course not.
Like,
and, you know, even if you, I mean, it's better probably that you weren't paying attention.
Yeah. Now, if it was Home Alone, then yeah, I'm paying attention.
And especially Home Alone 2, A Tale of Two Kitties. I'm in.
Home Alone 2, staying in a big ass fucking hotel.
Yeah, the squeakle. Yeah.
The squeakle. Yeah. Well, welcome back to the show, everyone. Yeah. So just like last week, this episode's coming out on Wednesday. Jeremy, would you like to tell them why?
I was out of town. I was out of time, and no, see, this is probably, I mean, okay, so most professional shows would bank these, right? And so like we can just release them on time, so there's no issue. We do them one at a time, so yeah.
Well, I mean there was that one time we did have two episodes in the can because we knew, well, I mean, we just recently did it when I went to Disney, you know, we had that episode locked and loaded.
That's true.
Ready to go.
Sometimes we're responsible, but not all the time.
Yeah. And would you like to tell everyone where you went?
Went to Branson, Missouri.
Missouri.
With me and some friends, yeah. I caught a fish. Haley caught two fish. I know.
One fish, two fish?
Yeah, one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. I'll send you the photos so you can put them up.
Nice.
Mine was very impressive. My fish. It was approximately. Okay, so Haley's were about 14, 15 inches. So hers were pretty substantial. So, you know, a little over a foot long. Mine was... Again, approximately, we didn't measure it, but judging by how big hers were, mine was about 3 inches long.
wait, you're saying 3 inches long or 3 inches longer?
3 inches long total. So when I caught it, there were some fishermen. Oh, I think Haley just sent you the pictures while I was sending.
Yes, she did, and that's funny as hell.
There were a few other fisher people around us, and when I caught it, I was so excited, and they said, wow, good job. They use that as bait. And I caught
Now, here's a question for you, buddy, because I know how much of a humanitarian you are.
Yeah.
Was it catch and release, or did y'all cook them up?
It was catch and squish. So we'd catch them, we'd put them on the ground, and we'd squish them with our feet.
You're fucking lying. I was about to say.
No. So, it was catch and release. I was Listen. I wanted to do catch and throw it as far as you can in the lake. Okay.
Oh my God.
But people around me were like, no.
Absolutely no. Do not do that.
So it's catch, and then here you go. Right back in you go.
Well, I mean, good job, buddy. I don't have the patience for fishing.
It does take a lot of that.
And I am also not quiet enough for fishing.
Old wives' tale, man. They can't hear you under the water. So
no, I know.
Do that, just wanted you to shut up.
That's probably true. Brief little story, and then we're going to jump into the episode. The last time I distinctly remember fishing was years ago. It was, I think I was like 8.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan was barely 2. And we went to Brady to see my great grandparents. Brady, Texas, for anyone who doesn't know, is on pretty much a lake. And my dad, my granddad, my uncle, and me and Jordan all took a fishing trip, and it was like an overnight fishing trip. So we slept on the boat. That was fucking terrifying. Because even though the boat my granddad had, you know, had railings, and it was a big boat, you know, I was still so terrified to sleep outside in a life jacket, and it fucking cold.
Yeah, Haley would have passed away if you made her sleep on top of a boat overnight. She would have passed away.
It was not fun. And apparently my dad all night had been trying to catch this one catfish, and the catfish kept like eating all his bait and then like running away. Point being, that was the last time I remember fishing. I don't have the patience for fishing.
Yeah. No, it takes a lot of patience. We're out there for a few hours. And Haley and I were the only people that caught anything. Our other two friends did not catch anything. So
now patience for golf. That's another thing. I have patience for golf.
Yeah. You're doing a little bit more. It's a little more active.
That's true.
Yeah. Fishing is literally just, I'm sitting down or standing depending on, you know, and it was cold too. So we were, you know, it was a little chilly. Maybe like 50 degrees, maybe.
That sounds like fun, buddy. You're in Missouri.
Yeah.
You're not from Missouri. Or as Peter Quill would say, like, well, he wasn't from Missouri, you know, when in the second movie. Anyway. Well, everyone. If you have been paying attention to last week's episode or just in general to this season, you know that we are now in the end of season series. Just a quick reminder, this season, it was my pick, and I decided to do something kind of interesting, kind of in the vein of how we did The Dark Knight, sort of a series in quality. That the quality of these movies goes down. But of course, I'll let Jeremy be the judge of that, considering I'm the one who's seen all four of these movies. But we are doing the Matrix films, which means today we are starting with the first film, The Matrix. I think we can both openly say that we both did not see this movie in theaters.
Oh, no.
Because this was 1999, and I distinctly remember the first time I ever saw this movie was on VHS, probably in like 2003 or 4, around the time the sequels were planned.
I'm trying to think if we had this on VHS. I don't think we did. The first time I saw it was on cable, so like I saw it on like TNT or something. Yeah.
You know? Oh, so you saw it censored.
Yes. Yeah, and I really kind of don't remember. Like, this was my first time, honest to God, sitting down and watching it. Like, with no interruption. I only seen it that one time, I guess. I mean, I had it on DVD. I remember having it. But it's probably just one of those situations where it's like, yeah, I mean, I have, you know, stuff behind me that I haven't seen yet. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Probably one of those situations, but... Yeah, this time, Which,
well, so then
we'll talk about it, but yeah.
Well, so then I wanna hear your newly found fresh perspective of what you thought of this movie.
I, like most of the time, am in agreement with Roger Ebert, okay, where I really liked it up until about two thirds of the way. And I was like, oh, that's it. I forgot that was it. Because it's like, it's so intriguing. It's so interesting and so full of possibilities in this first section, even later on into like the, you know, bleeding into the second half of the film. And then, you know, we ended a shootout, which is cool, right?
Uh-huh.
But it's like, are we using all that we have for this story? I don't think so. And maybe we'll get a little bit further into it, which I doubt, in the next ones.
Well, a little tease for part two, when we get to Matrix Reloaded, the Wachowskis add more to the mythology. That's all, okay, I'm going to say. So, because look, I was literally having a conversation with my mother about this. Reloaded has a lot of interesting things that I wish the Wachowskis would have expanded on.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's all I'm going to say, because I, you know, this is going to be a 4-part thing.
Right. Because there's a part of me that wanted, and again, like, it's almost like I'm seeing this for the first time. Like, I know I've seen this movie before, but really, I mean, I'm thinking about it in a new way this time. And this time I was like, you know, I really wish we had delved a little bit more into, you know, it would have been a different movie, of course, but like with Neo, just like being, you know, like he would have an existential crisis. This guy would be inconsolable waking up and be like, what is going on? You know?
Okay.
Like, imagine, yeah. You know, like he would be a broken person for a year at least. And then we can go, okay, he's better now. We've got him acclimated to this real world. You know, now let's talk to him about, you know, let's, you know, save the world, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So before we get too deep into it, I'll run through the quick synopsis.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen The Matrix, which what rock have you been living under? The Matrix is a dystopian. I didn't do a thumbs up.
You did.
Son of a bitch. A dystopian sci-fi action film following our main character, Neo, played awesomely by Keanu Reeves, one of his probably most, besides more recently, one of his more defining roles. Neo is a hacker who is trying to find this guy named Morpheus. Spoiler alert, he gets to meet Morpheus, played wonderfully by Lawrence Fishburne. But as Jeremy just kind of pretty much said, Morpheus opens Neo's eyes literally, because what Neo thinks has been his real life has been a simulation this whole time. That in the year, I think it's 2199 or 2990, it's like 1,000 years after, I don't remember. Anyway,
yeah,
far distant future, machines have taken over and have turned humans into batteries, essentially, to run their empire. And the reason why Neo is so special is Morpheus is convinced he is the one. And so this movie is a little bit slower in terms of mythology. I'm still in the synopsis. But Neo learns of the prophecy of the one. He's not fully convinced. Morpheus is convinced. Morpheus is then kidnapped by these programs called the Agents, which are the machines, led awesomely by Hugo Weaving as Agent Smith. And Neo decides to go back into the Matrix to save Morpheus, and in doing so, inadvertently becomes the one, starts to believe that he really is the one, saves the day, and then that's the Matrix. So I see what you're saying. There is this movie doesn't have a lot of, I don't necessarily want to say substance, but I will agree with you that the half of the movie is build up to this world that we've been living in, that everything has been a simulation, that the real world is so much more bleak and there's just remnants of humanity. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, I agree with you that like, let's build on that more. But on the other hand, I'm like, well, we don't need to. We already know the stakes. We already know where the world is. We need to know if Neo is this one that everyone's been talking about.
Sure.
So, sure. So I agree with you to a point. Mm-hmm. I really like this movie. I probably rewatched this movie multiple times. Mm-hmm. Problem is how I rewatch The Matrix is I can't just watch The Matrix and then I'm done. I have to watch the rest of them. And originally that was just the other two, but now it's the other three, which we're going to get to. But I fully agree with what you're saying, because I do wish that the Wachowskis had expanded on it more. I think the reason why they didn't, and we talked about this in our Perfect Blue episode, shout out to our Perfect Blue episode, that episode's doing really fucking good.
Nice.
But they drew a lot from an animated film, Ghost in the Shell. Okay. Not the Scarlett Johansson version.
Well, no, obviously. Of course not.
But there's a lot in Ghost in the Shell that they pulled from, mm-hmm. If not outright ripping off scenes. But again, Aronofsky did the same thing with Perfect Blue. So I think maybe that's why. Maybe okay. they knew, like, people are going to already compare this to Ghost in the Shell. Let's try to move it around. Now, of course, the dystopian thing of the machines taking over is not in Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
In the universe of Ghost in the Shell, humans have just augmented themselves with cybernetic enhancements. But Ghost in the Shell deals with memories, identity, and, you know, the human brain being hacked, essentially. So, so that part they drew from, but anyway, I'm just trying to help lead us.
Right. No, you know, this movie is a lot of fun. It's really cool. You know, it's up there with one of the best sci-fi films, you know, ever made. It's this cool, like, cyberpunk mixed with some gung-fu, you know, that John Woo made very popular with, like, things like Hard Boiled, and which is cool. The bullet timing, of course, is revolutionary, and it changed movies mm-hmm. forever. This movie probably changed movies forever because, you know, it just showed you, you know, there's very little limitations with what you can do, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, this movie still has its flaws. And I'm not going to say, you know, like, I'm not going to sit here and just bash The Matrix. That's not what I'm here to do. I like this movie. It's a cool movie, and I like it. Okay?
Yeah.
Just one of the, you know, while I was watching it, I was like, you know, I want a little bit more. First, I want way more explanation of what he means by he's a hacker. I don't know what that means, right? I need so much more info when it comes to, you know what I mean? Like, I know I don't really need it, right? But it seems to be kind of important, which is how he's connecting with Trinity in Morpheus and getting involved with that. But we get very little of that. And I wish I could have spent a little bit more time, honestly, with him in the actual Matrix, with him being sort of unaware of it.
Okay.
And then we could juxtapose that with him being aware of it and maybe spending a little more time with him in the Matrix knowing it's a simulation, right? If he knows it's a simulation, how does that change his day-to-day life? You know, obviously it does, right? Or it would.
Right.
And seeing what that does to him, right? That would have been really cool. Also, his eventual relationship with Trinity, I feel, is undeserved, period. There is no indication they even know each other's first name.
Just wait till we get to Resurrections. You're going to be so fucking mad.
I'm not mad because
I was mad.
Okay, well, I feel that it's undeserved in this film. We've already established it now for the films to come. So it's like I can't be mad at it because we've technically established it with this movie. But we didn't establish it for this climax at the end, right? They spend very little time together one-on-one. They're, you know, we're not getting a lot of scenes with them building a connection, let alone a romantic connection. That's insane. But
yeah,
those are my
and I agree, you know, the love plot with Trinity and Neo is sort of rushed.
Yeah.
But I think the Wachowskis were just hoping people would be like, oh, well, because as she tells what she thinks is a dead Neo, you know, her prophecy that the Oracle told her, I think the Wachowskis were just banking on people to be like, oh, well, it was predetermined. Like, they were always going to fall in love, you know?
I see.
But
yeah, and
but no, but I understand where you're coming from.
And that's fine. I mean, most of this movie is really cool, and it's really fun to watch. It's super entertaining. There's lots of action. There's lots of, you know, where there's problem solving. There's training. There's, you know, lots of gunfire. I mean, yeah. And again, you know, with the climax being just this massive shootout is fine, right?
Well, shootout and chase, because it is technically a chase as well.
Right. What that has to do technically with the actual Matrix is sort of like whatever. I think that's also a little wishy-washy, but I like it, right? It's still fun, right?
Yeah.
The stuff that this movie gets right is pretty much like anything that seems sort of like digitally surreal, meaning like anything that deals with him being in a simulation, being aware that it's a simulation. That stuff's super cool. I really enjoy it. CGI still pretty much holds up. There are shots with Morpheus in the two pills in the reflection in his glasses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That looks amazing. I don't know. I still don't know how they did that because that's not how reflections work. So I think that's really cool. That, you know, it gets each hand in either lens. That's really cool. Let's see what else. I mean, the Oracle stuff, I probably would have liked more of that. I would have liked more information about the Oracle and the prophecies. It would have been cool to see the past, the past people that Morpheus had brought into the crew, because they talk about it. You know, there's exposition of people he's tried before that he thought might have been the one and failed. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Well, so I'm about to blow your mind.
Okay.
So, your whole thing about the Oracle and the prophecies. So, yeah. Truth be told, the next movie is going to answer that question.
Okay, cool.
This movie, once we get to Reloaded, mm-hmm. next week, maybe we'll get there.
Yeah.
Once we get to Reloaded, the universe just expands.
Okay.
So this movie really is just a setup movie giving us very little information. And that's, again, that's why I agree with why why you agree with Roger Ebert about some of the, like, how the plot of the movie goes, because this movie is just sort of like the building blocks. And then the other thing is the animated films, the Animatrix, doesn't really go into the other people that Morpheus has tried out, but it gives us more context to what happened between the machines and the humans.
Okay.
And it's a really cool animated film.
Herein lies the question then. Because what you're saying makes perfect sense if they always planned on sequels.
That's true. And
is that the case? Because if that's not the case, then we're talking loose ends. In my heart of hearts, I feel that the Wachowskis did not plan on sequels, because when they did sequels, they did them a few years later, and then they just did them back to back. Right?
I'm going to agree with you on that. I don't think they ever intended to. Here, I'm looking it up right now. I don't think they ever intended to do a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, the first one was 99. And then Reloaded was in 2003.
Yeah.
So, or at least it was released in 2003. It was filmed. Between 2001 and 2002. So about 2 years later, they started production on a sequel. But then they film. I'm assuming they filmed. Revolutions. Back to back.
Yeah, they did those back to back, or like at the same time, probably.
So I want to say, I'm going to play devil's advocate and say initially, no, they did not plan on doing a sequel.
Which again,
and then
is fine.
And then after the release, I think they're like, oh, there's more story to tell here.
Well, and it's easy to expand on, because, like, you could argue that these aren't loose threads necessarily. These aren't loose threads necessarily. They're more topics for interpretation, right? Or,
okay.
Or you get to decide, right? It's a choose your own adventure. You get to decide what this means, or where this storyline goes, or what the implications of this is. Roger Ebert compared this movie a lot to Dark City. Shout out to our Dark City episode.
Well, some of it was filmed on the Dark City set.
Well, there you go. Dark City, I mean, this is going to be controversial. Okay? Dark City, if we're talking director's cut of Dark City, I like it more than this. Okay. I like Dark City more than this. Probably just for aesthetic purposes. And it's like the whole thing is a mystery, right?
Yeah.
Which I like. And it takes a while. I mean, and you get these bits and pieces, and you're putting it together. They're giving you information, but they're not giving you the whole piece yet. You know, it's all, you know, it's great. I love Dark City.
Yeah, if anyone didn't know if Jeremy loved Dark City, go back and listen to our Dark City episode.
This one, though, it has similar bones to Dark City. It just, it answered things too fast for me, because it would have been so cool if I just let me think about it for a while, like what could possibly be going on. And then when they unplug him, so cool, right?
I see what you're saying. So what you're saying is, rather than we only get maybe like a fourth of Neo's life in the simulation, we should have gotten maybe a third.
Maybe. Okay. This is also probably a negative byproduct of this movie being so ingrained in our society, in our pop culture, in even in just the normal lexicon of just how people speak to one another. Anytime something weird happens, or there's a weird coincidence or whatever, people always say it's a glitch in the Matrix, right? I mean, this is just like, it's just part of our world now. So, you know, I'm sure if I were in the theater and in 1999 and we're, you know, 30 minutes in and Neo gets unplugged, I'm losing my mind, right?
Yeah.
And I don't need a whole half trying to figure it out, right? Because that's not the point. The point's not to figure it out. It's not a mystery movie. I'm scolding myself. I'm like, chair, it's not a – quit it. It's not a mystery. It's not a puzzle. You don't need to solve it. And again, with this movie is – there's a lot going on. And even with the antagonists, I like in this one, I'm sure it's different in the other ones from what I remember. I've caught maybe like 20 minutes of it on cable once, the second one.
Uh-huh.
In this one, it's different people playing agents, right? Is it my understanding that it's just Hugo in the next ones? That he is Agent Smith and he's all of them?
So, yeah. So a little tease for the next two episodes. Yes. In this film, Hugo Weaving is one of the many different agents.
Right.
When Neo explodes him, he frees him from the rules of the restrictions within the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
So he can be free. So he just starts to take over.
I see.
So he starts taking over everyone, other agents, other humans that are still plugged into the Matrix. So yeah. So for the next two movies, it's all just Hugo.
It's all Hugo. Okay, that's
cool. Which is going to culminate when we get to part three of Revolutions, I'm going to just save that. But yeah. But yes, you're right.
So I, you know, in a way, I like both. I like that, you know, he's just one of many in this one, and then in the next one I guess it's cool that he's everybody. I mean, that's fine. It's time for me to say something nice. So things that I love, right? I love the idea of these agents are basically computer codes or viruses in a way, right?
Working for the machines,
right? So I like that. I like the idea that they can hack into people just at a moment's notice, right? Like they can take over your body, you know, while they're trying to chase Neo and company, you know, around the city.
Yeah. Whatever.
That's cool. I like that a lot. Okay. I do like the setting once we get into like sort of this third act. I like the way it looks. I think it's really neat, right? I like sort of the grungy sort of like, again, the cyberpunk, but like leather cyberpunk. It's kind of cool. I love that, you know, these, and Haley even said it, we were watching the movie and she was like, it was when Neo was going to that bar in the beginning to meet up with someone who knows Morpheus or whatever it was. And she goes, is that a S&M club? And I looked.
Yes, it was.
And at first I said, no, that's crazy. And then I looked and I said, it does seem a little submissive and dominant in there.
Apparently it was a real, because they filmed in, I think, Alberta, Canada.
Okay.
It was a real S&M club. And the Wachowskis are like, just wear what you would normally wear when you come here.
They nailed it. And that's the aesthetic, you know?
And then, of course, we have your favorite song playing in that scene, by the way.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it is? Do I remember
what song it was? I don't remember. It's been days.
It was Dragula.
Oh, that's right. Because Haley started singing. That's right. Because I was excited because she got excited. And I was like, oh, that's sick. It's Dragula. It's a dope song.
And that's the old... Yeah, it's the only Rob Zombie we get, and then the rest we get like this like techno, like the score is like
some,
like,
it definitely becomes not my bag after that.
Yeah.
However, I do like that with these guys. I don't really know what to call them. It's Neo, Morpheus, Trinity. As a collective, I don't know what to call them, but
I guess you could call them. I don't know why this popped in my brain first, like the Unplugged. I don't know.
Jesus. Hate that, but I'm going to keep saying it. the Unplugged. So when they go in, it sounds so stupid. When they go in, I just love that it's like we gotta have like similar gear on so we know who we are. And so they're all just in leather. You know?
Leather and black, except for Switch. Switch is the only one in white.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Because even like, I think it's because I've seen him in so many other different things. I'm going to praise him for a moment because I love his stuff. Is Joe
Pantaleone.
Right. Joe Pantaleone. Eventually we need to do Memento or The Fugitive, but I've seen him in those, and so him just in like leather and black, and it's like it sort of seems out of place because like he should be some like middle-aged, mild-mannered cop somewhere, you know?
Thanks to Seth MacFarlane, anytime I see Joe Pantaleone, is it Pantaleone? Pantaleone? It's
Pantaleone.
Every time I see him, all I can think of is that fucking Seth MacFarlane audio of the, you know, Joe Pantaleone is good at also playing not Italians.
Spoiler. No, he's not. Because he's super Italian in this too. And, but I liked his turn. Like, that was something that I was like, I could kind of see it coming. But then also I was like, oh, that was surprising, right?
That he betrays everyone.
The Unplugged.
How about fuck.
It's too good.
Because it's
you nailed it. First stop, best stop.
I was recent, so I'm just gonna move on from it. I'm not gonna try to come up with a new one. So I was watching a video, hopefully Future Rain credits it, of them breaking down the Matrix, and like they were talking about Cypher's character and how interesting they found it that he would be the one to betray them, you know. And especially what he wants is to be plugged back into the Matrix. Like,
well, and I get his point, which is why I like his character, because I understand like it's such a burden now to know what it's like, you know? And now he has all this responsibility to try to help everybody else. And it's like he sort of foolishly got wrapped up in Morpheus's, you know, prophecies and in
crusades.
Right. And so he's like, I shouldn't have done that. Like, I should have just stayed in there. I was so much happier. This is so much harder. I get it. And so like I felt for him, you know, like just plug me back in. Let me like wipe me, you know, wipe my memory, plug me back in. Let me be. Right.
Make me someone important, like an actor.
Yeah. Like an actor. Exactly. And so I get it. I understand. I mean, it seems so much harder to do what they're doing. But it also made me feel like Morpheus, which is ironic, that his name is Morpheus. Neil Gaiman fans know that Morpheus, puts people in their dreams, not takes them out of them. So,
He's talking about the Sandman, everyone.
And just in general, the mythical character of Morpheus.
But I think that was the point. I think the Wachowskis were like, oh, his name is Morpheus, you know, the god of sleep. Right. But he wakes people up. You know?
Right. No, yeah. I did like that. It was not lost. I mean, it's cool. His character is super interesting because he's sort of like, to give a modern example, he is Stilgar, right? He is convinced that Neo is the one. He is the Lesson Al Gaib. Right? And I like I like that he's like so desperate to find like the person that's gonna save everybody, that's gonna unplug everybody, and so they're also part of the unplug. And to save this dystopian and bring order and civilization back to humans, the people.
Yeah. And
he seems to, like, from like we were talking about just a moment ago, it seems that he is willing to sacrifice people to find that person, right? People have died? Question mark. I guess they died, right? Because if you die in the Matrix, you die for real. Isn't that what they said? And
keep going.
And so, like, he's so which reminded me a lot of Stilgar and his sort of desperation to find the Lesson Al Gaib and to find the Messiah, to save the Furman and, you know, to get rid of the Harkonnens and all that stuff. This time, though, I don't know. It's sort of like, no, it's just about the same. I would say it's about the same.
Well, I would say, though, where it is, it does slightly differ, maybe, is that Stilgar was never burdened with a prophecy that he would be the one to find the Lesson Al Gaib.
That's true. Morpheus has that sense of responsibility, like that he is the only one that can do this, that can find these people.
The Oracle told him that he would find the one. So I think that's why.
Yeah.
But you know, it's something that I didn't really understand until I got older is, you know, the Wachowskis really leaned into Christianity in this film. And so, you know, Morpheus is blinded by faith that I will find the one.
Yeah.
And the Oracle even tells Neo that, you know, he's so blinded, he will be willing to sacrifice himself.
Yeah.
If he even knows 1% that you are the one, he will sacrifice himself. And we see that he sacrifices himself.
Yeah, he does.
To stall the agent so everyone else can get out. Yeah,
he does put himself at risk, right? For sure. For this crusade to find the one, right? Does he really kind of go into detail about what exactly he's looking for? No. It's just like, I know it when I see it, sort of a thing. Okay. One more and I'll let it go. Maybe so me, the audience, can have something. Let me in on it. What am I looking for? Because, like, I'm like everybody else. I'm like, no, he's not. Right?
Because, yeah.
You know?
No, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Because I was talking to Mom about this. I was like, because Neo will bring balance to the Force, you know? And, we don't really know what we're looking for. Okay. If I had any qualms with this movie, I would say it would be that. We don't know what we're supposed to be looking for. You know, like you brought up Dune, so I'm going to bring up Dune again.
Cool.
We kind of know what we're supposed to be looking for. You know, this voice from the outer world, there will be signs,
right?
You know, as it's written, you know, as Stilgar repeatedly says. But for the one, we kind of don't know what we're looking for. You know, there's no... All the prophecy states is that the one will come and free humans.
Right.
And that's all we know. And then when Neo kind of becomes the one, he is, essentially, at least for this film, we never fucking see it again in the other two films. But apparently while he's in the Matrix, he can't die because he literally gets shot point blank and then like, is fine.
Yeah.
5 seconds later. And then apparently he can fly. Which again, I don't know. I
would fly too. If I were in the Matrix, I would fly too. If I could, I would fly. And okay, another question I have is, we do get a POV from Neo when he becomes the one, I guess. And he sees the code, right? Is that just now how he like walks around? Well, he's in there.
I don't know. Maybe that's why he wore, well, we haven't gotten to the other ones yet, but in the next movies, all he wears glasses, sunglasses all the fucking time. So maybe that's
really bright, so I don't blame him.
I think it's more that like, yeah, now I can see through the illusion right. of the Matrix. Yeah,
he's in control, right?
Yeah.
So I get that.
Spoiler alert, in the third movie, he can do it in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Lots of spoilers today. Okay. Yeah, I took it when I saw it. The only reason I brought him out because I was just thinking about it. I took it as, you know, he can see through the artifice of the Matrix and he can, mm-hmm. you know, be in control. I don't think it's like literally that's how he sees, right? Because that would be crazy.
I know, just everyone's trying to hold a conversation with him. He's like, I don't know. I can't see through the walls.
I can see and hear everything all at the same time. Could you please just hold on? You know,
Let me Man of Steel adjust real quick.
Yeah, exactly. Weird shout out. but I get it. It was a good analogy. So I want to talk briefly about just how impossibly complicated filming some of this stuff is.
Okay.
Okay, Keanu Reeves is in a room that is literally covered in cameras.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And the cameras are timed, or they're all filming at the same time, and then you choose, like, what it's like. It's almost like putting together a panorama, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just how cool it looks and how slick it is. And how, I mean, just how clean it is, truly a testament to the time, right? Again.
Oh, for sure.
you get stuff like this in 1999, yet in 2013, Baz Luhrmann can't get water right. You know what I mean? So.
For which?
For The Great Gatsby.
For.
So we talked about it. The water looks terrible. So anyway. Like, it's so cool. And to come up with that concept is so interesting because it truly is like a game changer when it comes to filmmaking.
Yeah, I think what it was is this was during a time when CGI was so new that they were taking their time with it. You know, I mean, not to say that films nowadays don't take time. I'm sure they do take time, but
not all the time.
Well, in terms of filmmaking, mm-hmm. visual effects, we all know they make those motherfuckers crunch hours on hours. But, you know, during this time, you know, they like, I'm going to use a movie that you don't really like that much that you've even told me, Jurassic Park, you know, I mean, that CGI, I mean, yes, you can tell that CGI, but it still holds up. And I think it's because, especially with this movie, too, that they dedicated so much time to make sure it looked right and not fake.
Yeah.
And again, another spoiler alert for the CGI in the next two movies. that doesn't move on, unfortunately. You'll know what I'm talking about when we get there. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's what it is. And I think that's why it holds up so well. I think that's why now, still in 2024, we're still talking about this and talking about the visual effects because, and I think it is a testament to that they took their time and made sure. As we're now, I mean, yes, as we were talking about off mic, you know, Godzilla Minus One, that visual effects team,
dude,
with probably half the budget that The Matrix had, received an Oscar for the CGI for Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah.
But I was even told today by my assistant manager that even though it still looks great and it was well deserved, they still had to crunch probably so many hours mm-hmm. to make it look like that.
Of course. Right. It takes a lot of time. And you're right. This takes a level of effort that's crazy. Right.
Yeah.
Because you're combining not only like these new camera setups, which is crazy, but then you're also having to tack on digital computer graphics, right? On top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not just like in the very beginning with Trinity where you get that quick, you know, 180 camera move, right?
Mm-hmm.
With everything being, you know, freeze framed, and then you still move throughout the freeze frame, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But then the later when you get Neo's, you know, you have those bullets coming too. Right. You have all this other stuff mm-hmm. that you have to piece together, and it just looks so cool. Still, which again, it's iconic.
I think it's because, I did watch a video today that kind of came about of the Wachowskis being inspired a lot by the visuals of Akira, which we talked about in our Akira episode. You know, cause Katsuhiro Otomo really knew what he was trying to do with the camera. And there was another thing that influenced them too with that. But I do find it funny that they kind of trademarked it and called it Bullet Time.
Bullet Time. Yeah.
And you know what's interesting is no one's really used this technology since. I mean, yeah, it's been parodied in, you know, several parody films, but like no one's really utilized this technology since The Matrix.
I think because it's so impractical, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like a one-time, I mean, you have to go to it, right? You can't really bring mm-hmm. it with you, you know? It's a room, you know? And I'm yeah. sure there are ways you could do it now that's a lot easier. And probably a lot more efficient. And maybe even portable, right?
Yeah.
Take like that stupid thing. What's it called? That ruined Quantumania, but makes the
The volume,
the Mandalorian cool. Okay. The volume. Like take that for instance. Like you could use something like that in this case, and it's something very similar, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
It's obviously it's not recording; it's like projecting, right? I mean, it's used for a different purpose, but you get the idea.
Yeah,
but you know, but at the time, I mean, yeah, no one can do it because no one. Number one, it's hard. It's impractical, mm-hmm. and it's, I mean, it just takes so much effort, so much work. These guys are willing to put that in. Good for them, you know.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like. In a way, The Matrix, to my knowledge, I think it sort of set a precedent that they just could not meet again. Meaning,
I agree.
Like, they're now these, you know, now the Wachowskis are known for this visual, you know, spectacular. That, you know, mm-hmm. you have to go see, right? Because, oh my God, look what they did with the Matrix. You know, how cool that looked. Let's go see this.
Yeah, let's go see Speed Racer.
Let's go see Speed Racer. Let's go see Cloud Atlas. Let's go see Jupiter Ascending. Yeah. Now, Cloud Atlas, I'll give a pass because it's a really dense story and it's, you know, well, they did the best they could with that. I mean, that.
Oh, and didn't they? And didn't they self-fund that too? Because like, I feel like they lost funding at some point.
I don't know.
Yeah, no. I see what you're saying. Yeah, because they really did. They really did set a precedent. Because you're already getting it. You're already getting what I wanted for this series.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the next film, Reloaded, I mean, I keep teasing it, but like, I'm sure someone, Zach, who's seen it, knows that, like, yeah, they couldn't, they tried new things with Reloaded. And then, of course, Revolutions.
Can't wait.
And then Resurrections, which is, that's a whole nother can of worms. But yeah, I agree. Cause then, like, yeah, like I said, like, then you go see fucking see Speed Racer.
God. Well,
I will never forgive them for Speed Racer.
I mean,
absolutely.
It sucks because you have such great success and you have such a great idea and a great vision, and it does so well. And people love it. People are talking about it forever, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I misdid math while I was watching the movie. And I was like, wow, you know, it's probably coming up on 20 years. And I thought about it, I go, no, it's way older than that. It's like, you know, 25
or something. Yeah, it's like
that. 25. I was like, oh, it's closer to 30. That's insane. Right. That this movie, you know, it's still relevant. Everyone still loves it. It's, you know, and rightfully so. It's great. Right.
Also, the only reason why I know it's 25 is because I watched it on Max and it says 25th anniversary.
Oh, there you go.
So
like, that sucks. And, you know, we have other examples in film history where someone does something so well right off the bat and then it's like, now where do you go? Right?
Yeah.
Unless you completely shift, right? Which I think would have been better. If they just went, you know what, we're going to do something completely different and we're going to get off of sci-fi. We're going to get off of, you know, these visually stunning things. We're going to do something a little different and then we'll package that in a really interesting way. That way there's no comparison, right?
I agree.
But unfortunately, it's just, you know, let's do sci-fi epics and, you know, and we'll disappoint you for forever.
Yeah. And we'll make a whole fucking movie purely on green screen and then we'll constantly remind you, like, hey, do you remember this fucking anime from the 60s? Again, I will never forgive them for Speed Racer.
And Speed Racer looks movie, like it would give me a headache.
The movie sucks. Oh my god, it sucks. and look, hang on. Emil Hirsch is doing God's work, okay? He's trying. He's trying so hard to help you care about Speed. And even fucking Christina Ricci and Susan Sarandon and John Goodman. Like, they're trying so hard to get you to care about these characters, but the fucking, it's the visuals. The visuals and the, everyone just go see Speed Racer. And you'll understand.
No. Okay.
Anyway.
All of that.
But said, yes.
It's, this movie is great. It sets a precedent, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They really can't reach that bar again, to my understanding. Now, am I going to hate these next two? I don't think so. Or three. I don't think I'm going to hate them. I think that I'll still have fun. I think I'm going to be entertained. I think I'm going to get more story, which is fun, right? I'm going to get more action, which is fun. I don't think, like, I'm not going into these, like, rolling my eyes. I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, no, I think you're going to enjoy this series. I will say personally, my least favorite is three. Three is my least favorite.
Which is, we'll, I'm there, expecting, right? I'm expecting three or four to be the worst ones, right? Whatever. It's not like when I watch a movie, for me to say I hated it, I need to be mad it exists in the first place. Okay. Like Old, for instance. I'm so mad that movie exists, right? I hate that. Right? So
yeah.
That's pretty much the only time you'll ever hear me say it is if I'm angry it got made, if I'm less like, you have put no work into this, you have wasted my time, right? Which is sort of on me for wasting my own time, which makes me mad at me. And then here we are. But then it's like, I just feel like you didn't try. Right? Okay. I don't feel M. Night Shyamalan tried. Right? The fact
and
that
he's already got a new fucking movie coming out.
And his daughter, too. Like, I'm just over it, man. But so, but with this, like with these ones coming up, I already don't feel that way. So it's fine.
I think you're going to enjoy the movies. Cause again, two is going to give us more story, which we're going to get to. Three makes me angrier than anything. I'm the opposite of you. It makes me angry in the sense that I'm going to save it for when we do that. And then four is fine. But we'll get there.
Yeah, we're going to get there. Everyone is great in this.
Absolutely.
Again, Keanu Reeves really showing his talent for action, his talent for martial arts, his talent for, you know, at this time, I would say being so interesting without being interesting. Because at this point in his career, I think Keanu Reeves is like sort of dull. but
are you talking about like now?
No, now he's great.
Oh, you're talking about before he did The Matrix and
like, yeah, in this, you know, he's sort of dull, right? Like he's
no,
like Speed, Point Break, like he's sort of like the same sort of person. His line delivery is sort of like weird and.
Hey, you didn't mention Bram Stoker's Dracula.
In Bram Stoker's Dracula, that you know, his accent with that, you know, is crazy. But again, he's not terrible during this era. I'm not a huge fan of him in this era. This is a little bit more, but still sort of dull. But this movie is so interesting that he's interesting. So
yeah,
I'm cool with
well,
that.
Well, and you know what's funny is a lot of the stunt team that he worked with on this, he still works with to today. I mean, Chad Stahelski, who was his, I think, stunt coordinator on The Matrix, fucking directed him on all four John Wick movies. Yeah. So,
well, and dude, you can tell, right? Because again, the stunts and the action work in here is incredible, right? There's no denying this movie is stellar for action, right?
Absolutely.
So I guess let's wait and see.
Yeah. So Jeremy, I'm assuming that was our wrap up.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you know, man, again, as the movie is a setup, so is this first episode. The first episode is a setup. You know, I had a suspicion that we probably were just going to sing this film's praises, you know, to have nothing much to talk about. Reloaded, I can foresee that episode's gonna have a lot we have to talk about. But before we get to that, Jeremy, I think we have a special announcement for the audience.
Yeah.
So everyone, as most of you know, again, Zach, when we're in our end of season series, we tend to, you know, do all 3 to 4 parts of the series, and then we're done. Well, Jeremy and I did the math, and after this episode comes out, our next episode will be our 200th episode.
Boom, balloons and streamers.
Yeah. Hopefully Futurine puts that in.
You know,
excuse me. I'll probably will. But so we decided, like, well, what were we going to do? Were we just going to do Reloaded as our 200th episode, or do we want to do something special? So we decided after this episode, we're going to press pause and do something really special. We're going to do a watch a movie with us. Now we're still trying to figure out how this is all going to work. But essentially, Jeremy and I have picked a movie, which, I think we should keep it a mystery. Okay. That's unless funny. You just want to tell everyone.
It doesn't bother me. Okay.
I mean, while I'm talking, I'll decide. But we're going to do a watch a movie with us. You're going to hear our live reactions to the film, and you know, maybe we'll do a quick little breakdown after it. I mean, the movie we picked isn't that long, so
no, it's very short. I've seen this done before. I haven't gone and actually sat down, put it in my ear, and watched a movie at the same time, right? But yeah. I like the concept of it. I think it's like, I forgot who it was, but they were watching There Will Be Blood. And I was like, that'd be really interesting to like sit and like listen to someone while we're watching it. Sort of like commentary, but I don't have any fun facts for the production to share with you, right? Yeah. I wasn't there. So, yeah. But it's sort of like watching a movie with your buddies that you've probably seen 100 times or whatever. And so you guys can just chat through it and talk about the movie while you guys are watching it. It's sort of like the vibe we're trying to, you know, get. We're not going to put on like, you know, Solaris or anything or whatever. Like we're not doing that. You know?
No, if we did a movie like that, we for sure would have to, it would have to be you can watch it with us, but we're not talking.
Yeah. We're not doing 400 blows or anything. Like that'd be crazy.
So next week, will be the 200th episode. And we're going to be doing, I decided.
Okay.
We'll say it. We're going to be doing, a movie that we've kind of teased a lot. I know Jeremy, I know you've brought it up. I know I've brought it up. And it just fits really well for the vibe that we're trying to go with our 200th episode. So next week we are going to be doing Batman Mask of the Phantasm. I told mom that today and she was like, yes, that movie is awesome. I was like, that's why we picked it, because it is awesome. And like you said, Jeremy, it really fits with the vibe that we're trying to go with, just hanging out, watching a movie with your buddies. You know, this was one that growing up I had on VHS. I want to buy the 4K, even though my animated series collection came with it, but I do want to buy the 4K separately. It's a fantastic Batman movie, man. It's so good in that even though it takes place in the animated series universe, we don't need to know when it happens in the continuity.
Sure.
Because it's just so good.
Yeah. And you know, like to be clear, this isn't going to be like a live stream. This will be something that is pre-recorded. So we will tell you when to press play is essentially what I'm saying. So like we'll count down, we'll say press play, and then here we go. Right. So this is something that you can listen to later. You don't have to do it at any specific time and place. So
correct. Yeah. Jeremy and I are going to watch it live together. But you don't have to tune in. No, you know, maybe you
won't be able to. So
Future Rain maybe might post the full reaction. I don't know if we can. I mean, we're not monetized on YouTube, so I don't see why that would be an issue. But for sure the audio will be out, and so you'll get to hear our live reaction. You might hear the movie depending on if we can figure out, if Future Rain can figure out how to record the audio without you hearing the movie. But
right, I mean, I know how I'll do it. So you can figure out your own thing, but I'm just gonna have it in my ear. So
we'll talk about it once we're done. Sure. But yeah, everyone, so yeah, super exciting stuff. You know, if this goes well, maybe for the 300th episode we'll do it again. And maybe we will live stream it and you can tune in.
Who knows?
Who knows? That's a future Rain and Jeremy problem.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right, everyone. Well, we hope you enjoyed part one of our Matrix breakdown for our end of season series. And we will see you next week for our 200th episode.